No one ever told me where to go to. I had some fun, that's for sure. I lived my life the way I wanted, but it still seemed to need something more. So I sailed upon the ocean. I still haven't walked with the Lord. I've done some things I'm not so proud of. I kept it faith a time or two. I washed my hands with muddy water. That's no way to hide the truth. Well, I sail upon the ocean. I stood up on the shore. I climbed the highest mountain, but I still haven't walked with the Lord. And I surely will follow, so that someday I may be free. Well, I sail upon the ocean. I stood up on the shore. I climbed the highest mountain, but I still friends to carry me. I pushed it way past the limit. That's not the best place to be. So I sailed upon the ocean. I stood upon the shore.
Welcome to the Wolf's Den today. Today we have Mr. Andy Lambert in the studio. Now, Andrew, how are you today, my friend?
I'm fine. Fantastic. Thank
yeah.
you.
Now, to say you've been around the music scene in Nova Scotia for a little while, that would be kind of a little bit of an understatement, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, maybe so, but not really. I've been doing it for a long time, many years, yes.
Yeah, so like...
I'm 54. Soon going to be 55, so I've been doing it since I was about 15 or 16.
About 15 or 16.
Yeah.
All right. And how did you start?
I started with my friend David Judo as a child. We each got Sears guitars, and we played in the basement. And, you know, started with a pitch pipe, and he got a tuner. Eventually, we could tune tight together and started to learn songs that we liked at the time. Black Sabbath.
That was my next question. So you went for the hard rock and roll. You weren't a folkie or anything.
No, we were influenced by that because our older brothers had albums that were popular at the time, which were like Bad Company and Deep Purple. And
okay.
All that kind of stuff. So yeah. That's the kind of music we liked at the time. You know, yeah.
Kind of stuff I cut my teeth on.
Me too.
And all right, so now you and your buddy are playing guitar in the basement.
Yes.
All right. How long did it take you to progress from playing guitar in the basement with your buddy into a band?
Within a few months, I think we had a little throw-together band where your friends had drums. And another friend of ours, Bentley Burke, was a very good guitar player at that age. He had taken lessons with Jimmy White.
Oh, my. Okay,
and
yeah.
Jimmy was a local guy that taught lessons at the time. And we were very impressed by him. He knew all the Doobie Brothers songs with all the proper chords.
Oh, so, my.
Just like a record. I knew 3-4 chords, and we saw Bentley, and he floored us how good he was. But Jimmy had been mentoring him, and yeah.
That just spurred you to go on a little bit more.
Spurred us to go on. So when we started playing with Bentley a lot, we had little bands and high school bands and stuff, yeah.
So what was your first, let's say, for lack of a better term, serious band?
I would say probably a little Collision band, which I had with David Judo and Bentley Burke, was a rock band, and we tried really hard to play well and stuff like that. And we just do coffee houses and underage bars. And by the time we were getting out of high school, though, all of us were getting not offers to play with people, but starting to play with older guys, because inevitably you end up playing with older guys. So that's where we branched out.
You know, if you're talking like mid-70s and that, the music scene in Halifax then was astronomical. Yeah. And the young music scene at the time, young bands, was just crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Sandy Road. You know, I went to school with Bruce Dixon. It was
fantastic.
Funny. On Friday afternoon, we'd all be going about to do our little things on the weekend, and Bruce would be booking it out the door, getting on the big green bus, and going playing with some of the biggest name bands in the in the province.
Yeah. I saw him with Oakley when I was just a kid on the Concert on the Hill.
Yeah.
Free concert. And Richie, of course, standing on top of the PA speakers with the cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And, they were fantastic players, as well as fantastic music, but really good players.
Yes.
And Bruce to this day, of course, is number one, you know.
Well, yeah.
Can't get any better.
I'd argue with anybody that there's better, but, you know.
He's fantastic, you know, he's the man. There's lots of great bass players in the city, but he's definitely one, for sure.
You know, Andy, still in all today, there's a lot of good players from back in the day, and there's a lot of new young players.
Sure is.
I imagine that you've seen a lot of changes over the years. Now, we were talking before we came on the air about not only do you play, and I mean, now let's just go through a little bit of the instruments you do play.
Bass primarily, a little bit of guitar, functioning guitar. You know, it helps with playing bass because you can identify the guitar players are playing by looking at their chords.
Yeah.
If you can't hear them. And the last 4 or 5 years, I've been playing keyboards with a Thursday night jam band we have here.
The Thursday Night Boys out here in Herring Cove.
Yeah, we have a bunch of local guys that we play with.
And, yeah.
Many of us have played professionally, a couple of them haven't. But so
you got that Mike Lefschitz fella back there beating on the
Mike
drums.
Mike Lefschitz and Roy Dempsey, Alan Hollett, Bentley Burke, my childhood friend, and Russell Tenor. And too many guitar players.
Yeah.
But, we play in sort of what one might call a circle, where songs really have no arrangement, but everyone gets to take a solo if they choose to. So when the progression comes around, it's Wayne's turn, then it's Jim's turn.
Okay.
It's who's ever turn at the time. And if you choose to want to get better, that's what we try to do on Thursday nights. We're not playing Brown Eyed Girl and our bar band stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so you keep up now. You have a few other bands that you play in.
I play with Jamie Miles and a father and son team, the Sullivans, Danny and Will Sullivan. They're from Prospect. They have a rock band called Shaker. They were going around for a long time.
Yeah.
And they play, you know, the local gigs.
Yeah.
Anyway, AYC, the Armdale Yacht Squadron, gigs like that, one-nighters.
Yeah.
And they had a bass player prior to me that retired, and I guess I knew the song, so there I am.
There you are. Hey, so get that guy. He knows that song. We need him.
Well, yeah, they're like the practice, and if you grew up my generation, you would have heard all of this stuff on the radio, and if you're any bass player at all, you should be able to play Creedence songs or Loverboy songs or Brian Adams songs very quickly, otherwise you're wasting your time. You know?
Yeah. Yes, and a member of the Troublemakers lives just down around the corner, Michael Delafont. He's just down the road here.
Yeah.
I mean, the talent. So now you play those instruments, and for a good many years you did sound.
When I wasn't playing, a lot of time I'd be a sound man around town. Yeah, and really, I did Nicholson, Wayne Nicholson, and those guys, and many other bands. I worked for Hamblin's Audio for a long time.
Oh, okay,
I worked for guys that were...
They were on...
Hood Street.
The Hood Street, just up the street from
Certainly
me.
Wasn't any big thing, but I did a lot of stuff. Bobby Curtola, those
you know,
kind of guys.
When I was with my birth parents, my birth mother, before I was adopted, I lived about three houses away from Hamblin on Windsor Street. It's a great big, huge house now.
Okay.
When I lived there, it was a little tiny wee two-story house, but Hamblin's was just down around the corner going down the hill.
Yeah.
And then I lived just the next block down as a teenager.
So that started because I was working there. You know, like working in a music store kind of thing as the PA guy. And when I wasn't playing, it was always friends of mine that needed a sound guy. And a sound guy, by the way, can make or break your band if you have a good one.
Oh, if you have a good sound man, you're going to put out a good sound.
And if you survive with it's sink or swim business, if you survive and do a good job, you'll work, you know. And but if you're awful, people know that.
It doesn't take long to figure it out.
You know, and just because you plug it in all right, that can help. And because everything works, that helps too. But you certainly should have good ears. You know, and there are some very good sound men in town and some bad sound men. You know. So,
yes.
You know.
Yeah, we know. And you know what? And it's unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, deafness comes with the business because we never learned to protect our hearing.
No.
I mean, how many towers did we stand in front of to hear whether or not there was any static or any feedback coming out of them? And, you know, craziness. Go to a concert at the Forum and pick your spot in front of the column of speakers so you could hear the best. You know, and now you say, what?
Yeah, it was almost like alcohol or drugs and that people don't know how far you're going until you've gone too far.
Exactly. You
know, only once I was at something at the Forum, just one of these Nostalgia Night concerts with Oakley and those guys, and I stood really close to the bass pins, and it went, and jeez, it took my breath.
Yeah.
And I never had that happen ever before, but for a second, I was like, wow, I could see the power there. I never felt that. It was just a proximity to this really nice set of Tortec bass pins that blew my head off.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I had a keyboard
one
player.
One good shot. It took my breath out like someone had punched me in the stomach.
Keyboard player had a little speaker that he was using as a wedge for his monitor, and he had it set up high on top of another speaker, and he had his keyboard and the sound man was trying to get him into sound and he wasn't online, and the keyboard player just kept tapping a key, kept tapping it, and the sound man found the right button just as I was walking by the speaker and it knocked me down. I went right down on my knees. Yeah. It just wham! It was like somebody punched me.
Yeah, I've watched pro guys at sound checks and been there sometimes. And when one guy's checking an instrument, you'll notice that for some reason or other, the other five guys are going like this.
Yeah,
Day they do this.
Yeah,
and some guy's getting a check, and it's almost like gambling. The bomb might go off.
Yeah.
So someone's ringing out your monitor, and the other guys got their ears plugged just in case they get them popped.
Yeah.
It can happen. It can happen repeatedly, but the best sound guys are so sneaky you don't even know what's going on.
Well, that's it. You know, I've been lucky over the last few years to work with some really, really good professional sound people, and it's not very
really
often
good guys.
You don't hear a guitar pop or anything, which is nice. You know. So now you went from playing.
Yeah.
And then you went into doing sound.
Yeah.
And then I suppose the natural progression from there would be recording.
Yeah, that was something I got into.
And ladies and gentlemen, tonight the Wolf's Den is actually in Andy's studio.
Yeah. And we affectionately call it Sadie's Place because for 12 or 13 years I had a German Shepherd named Sadie that would host. Of course, everyone came and she greeted everyone like a bouncer and everyone growled at, and then you were in and then you growled at the next guy. But she loved all of us and, you know, she was part of the whole fabric of what went on around here. And a Mike Oliver CD we did here, Mike had a puppy and her, and I don't know if she ever made it to the track, but they barked and beat it out of silence. So we used to say they were singing. But anyway, no, the place is named after her. She passed away a few years ago.
Well, that's a perfect sentiment and well-earned by Sadie.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Mike Oliver, now there's a name that goes back a few years.
I played with him for a long time with Dave James,
He's got a brother, Kevin.
Kevin, to be a big fellow. Big guy, yeah. Yeah, Kevin. And Chris Ankroll, Navon Patrick, and Rafe Wilson. He's a trumpet.
Yeah.
These are all Stad members.
Yes.
And who else? Ross Billard.
Oh, my. Lovely band.
Mike had a very nice big horn band. Just a recreational band. We didn't certainly play for money. And we did a couple CDs. I played on one. And Mike had done a previous one. And I'm going to give Jim a couple tunes to play. It's really nice big horn band stuff.
Dave
James, of course, was a master arranger, writer, and did all the horns and everything.
Yes.
It was someone I had never played in that world before on that level. And it's pretty nice.
I loved bands back in the 70s that were horn bands. I loved Sun Machine, Blaine Jollymore. Rest in peace, my brother. Yeah. I loved his music. I loved their music. Gary Bowers, again, rest in peace, my brother. You know, I mean, those are the guys that I cut my teeth on East Coast music. Yeah. Titan, you know, Scotty Rogers and Rocks, all of those guys. I mean, they were the bands that I listened to growing up. First band I ever worked with was a band called Magnum with Tony Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that goes back, I mean, I was in grade 7 or 8, I think, when Tony had Magnum, little three-piece band. You talk about loud.
Oh yeah.
Used to practice in his bedroom in the basement on Windsor Street, and we'd practice he'd practice at like show level in this bedroom.
Yeah.
So yeah, what?
My parents had a lot of that too, growing up.
Yeah. So now, so these walls have seen some East Coast recording.
Yeah. 5 or 6 CDs in the last 2 or 3 years, which exactly. Isn't a lot, really, but I don't try to make it a studio for money. It's just a...
I've waited all these years for. Cast away dark shadows at my fears. I'm sure.
Project studio.
You know, Andy,
Often I just track guys too. If you have a little band and you want to come out, come out on a Friday night, have a few beer, relax. And usually I plug the guys in on Friday. They come back Saturday and we track all day. And by the end of that, I got some pretty good tracks.
Wow.
They don't have to be printed CDs, but they can just be recreational CDs. So sometimes I do that. And the fact that the place is a little bit organic kind of makes people comfortable. You know.
Very organic and very, very comfortable.
I got that old Hammond organ there that is like a fixture point when it's fire it up if someone can play it. It works quite well. You know,
take me back to the 70s. Just please don't make me carry it up to the network. That's
exactly,
all.
Exactly. But that organ, just a side note, was Ross Biller contacted me one time, and he was doing some stuff for Ian James, Ian's last album. And
Yes Man.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how many tracks, because I never really looked at, but there's four or five of them that you hear the organ. And a couple mornings I got up and I said, hey, that's the organ. And you could hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
So it's Ross played it on a few of his songs.
Wow.
And they came out, and I actually just plugged them in. I think I was here one day. The other day I went to work, but they just strapped. And Sadie was here to keep track
on them. They weren't taking anything they weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of my favorite albums of 2017.
That
was
a good album.
I'm very blessed to know Ian. I'm extremely blessed to know his father very well.
He's a good guy.
Salt of the earth, really, really good guy. Ross Biller.
Ross Hills too.
I'm just going to say, you can't get any better. You know,
and
musicality-wise, those guys don't sit down to anything unless they're going to give it 100%.
No, Ross, I did that Dan Duaren.
Dan Duaren, yeah.
You know, the bunch of stuff with him a few years ago.
Yeah.
I went to Memphis and won it.
Yeah.
And
that was the Memphis Blues Challenge.
We practiced like little soldiers. And it was actually two or three nights a week of practicing.
Yeah.
Mike Carroll, fantastic drummer, was here. Ross was here. Boy, oh boy, it was tight. And, you know, just to get back to what you're saying about Ross, he puts 110% in. Always was early.
Yeah.
Always gentle and nice and soft and, you know,
yeah,
and complimentary. And, you know, he plays with everybody.
You know. And he does. And you know, for all the years that I've known him and been around him, I've never heard him say a foul word to anybody or anything about anybody or anything. And like you said, when he gets on stage, you know if Ross is going to go sit down. You know that you've got a good product coming out
he's
at the end
of
the day.
He's got your back.
You know it.
Yeah, he's like, it's like you're almost like a hockey team, you know. And
yeah.
When you skate up the ice, you know he's shooting the puck to you and letting you know that you're going to drop it to him. And
yeah.
It's like he's... he's a solid guy.
Yes.
And I
do believe I heard that Mr. John Campbell John has been here as well.
John, when I played for him, geez, this would have been maybe 2011 or so. We had a Good to Go CD here. Half of it. John does most of his stuff at home in his little his studio.
Yes.
And but we track the drums and the bass here to have the live room drums with Neil Robertson.
With Neil Robertson, yep.
And then John takes it home and edits it and does whatever he wants at home, you know, because that's the way everybody does it today. There's no need for him to drive from Cold Harbor to here to sit and us, you know, pick at it till 5 in the morning, because I'm no help to him anyway. Everybody has a vision, and that's the way he would do it, right?
Yeah.
So we track the drums. And for a while after I left, they started the Ron Hines, the young, fantastic bass player, played with them for a little while.
Yeah.
But then they started this new duo, and they would rehearse here, you know, and they still, John and I and Neil are still good buddies. So.
Yes, and John and Neil are still playing, but, and I hope I'm not talking out of school because I don't think I am, but I do believe that John Campbell John has a new CD coming out in the very near future with Wayne Nicholson.
Yeah, and Neil plays on that. And,
yeah, so
and
I would
Bruce
imagine.
And
yeah,
Bruce picks him too.
Yeah.
But, you know, just, I guess it's just a project CD kind of thing, you know, and, I guess they'll promote it, do whatever they can. But,
that'll be an interesting collaboration, John and Wayne. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Neil said they did it almost live off the floor.
Yes.
And it just took a couple days.
That's what Wayne told me.
But they're crack shots anyway.
Yeah, Wayne
shouldn't
told,
be anymore in a few
Wayne
days.
Wayne told me that it was all on the floor miking and everything. He said there was it was just an ambient setup and they just went in and did it.
And then John takes it home and goes over. Because John is a master, you know, operator of his Cubase program and... doing CDs. He's done many CDs. He knows what he's doing.
Yes. You know?
Yeah. He really does, yeah.
And he knows what he's doing when he gets out on stage, too.
He sure does. I played with him for four or five years, and I was fortunate enough I had five trips overseas with him. And
over to Belgium and that?
When they go. I never went to Belgium, but I went to Germany, Norway, Switzerland, where else? Croatia.
Nice.
And quite a long time in Italy, too.
Wow.
Yeah, beautiful.
I'm in the wrong business.
Yeah.
There's no room for MCs over there.
It was
there.
Work,
their
though.
Own.
It was
oh,
work.
Yeah.
I mean, like, because we'd get up, we'd play, go back to the hotel, and then in the morning we might have a drive that's as far as Sydney, Cape Breton.
Yeah.
And so we'd have to go 5 hours or something. And
yeah.
Boot it there. And sound check and all that stuff. And, you know, so the festivals were easy because there's a big PA. But the little bars, we often had to tweak the PA ourselves. And
yeah, going to make like sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But the people were nice. And yeah, it was always fun. And John's going over again soon, I think.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look, the more East Coast music that gets around the world, the better the world will be.
The ocean's a big barrier. Like, if it was just across the border, we'd be all playing.
Well, it'd be nice if we could just go across the border and play without all the red tape and the bull that it is to try to get into the States to play. I mean, you can forget that.
People from that aren't from here, they don't understand why we're not darting down to the U.S. and playing. They don't understand. And I don't. And I just said there's an invisible wall here.
Yeah, it's called tariffs and trade barriers.
It doesn't even matter if you're not a musician. You still try to go work down there. It's not as simple as one might think. But I would assume if you lived in Ontario, maybe the guys would dart across.
Back and forth to Detroit.
Probably,
you know,
done.
Yeah, Windsor.
If they live there, it's probably done like us going Halifax to Dartmouth.
Yeah.
But I know for us here on this Nova Scotia, it's difficult to get.
Well, I have a lot of friends that live in Campobello, Maine,
okay.
Or Campobello, New Brunswick, and,
okay.
and Lubbock, Maine is
yeah.
right next door, and there's a lot of collaboration there.
It must go back and forth.
Oh, it does continuously. I mean, Campobello's not,
otherwise.
Campobello's not big enough for a hospital or anything like that, so they have an agreement with the Americans. They can go to the American hospital and stuff like that if they don't get to St. Stephen's or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so now you've done, you've had John Campbell John in here.
Yep.
Who are some of the other guys you've had in here?
I've had E.B. Anderson and the Resolutes.
And the Resolutes. I love Mr. E.B.
And I did On Cold, Cold Ground, I believe the name of the CD is. And it was fantastic, live off the floor. Ross contracted me for that one. All he wanted you to do was track it.
Yeah.
So for those in the know, it's like you don't mix it, you just record it.
Yeah.
So I gave him the 24 tracks.
And he
Ross
took it out.
Really nice job
yeah.
mixing it. And I, you know, again, if it was bad, he would have told me. But the instruments should sound natural and not sound played with.
Yeah.
Because some guys you go to record with, you can have a beautiful snare drum and they'll turn it into something else. And you go, that's not what my drum sounds like. My idea is to try to pick it up naturally.
Yeah.
So you got to have good instruments in the first place.
And then you need all those little boxes to make a guitar sound like a guitar.
Yeah, and that's real counterproductive sometimes.
You know, look, I'm sorry, I'm not a musician.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking them, and I understand that this electronic stuff is good and everything, but it always amazes me that you've got a machine to make your guitar sound like a guitar. Yeah.
That's kind of gas. Gear acquisition syndrome, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, like, I mean, I'm at a gig and I'm emceeing it, and this
yeah.
guy comes in with a piece of, you know, a 4-foot by 4-foot piece of 2x4 or plywood, and it's got like 25 pedals on it. And I'm thinking, how do you even keep track?
Yeah, they add up slowly, but it's, I don't know how, what's a metaphor to explain that? It's like having, having 10 different hammers when you only need one. You know, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't have the 10 because you need a small one for one job and a large one for another, but these guys literally show up with everything.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's fine too, but I've played with guys that, like Bruce Timmons that only has one or two pedals.
Yeah.
Sounds like $1 million because it's in him. Eh? It doesn't
yeah.
matter what guitar he uses, what amp he uses.
Yes.
He may say he sounds terrible, but he always sounds fantastic.
Well, that's what, you know, like, I mean,
I've
listened to guys like J.P. Cormier and Bill Elliott, and I'm sorry, but I think maybe if they got any pedals at all, it might be one or two.
Sometimes all that is to help the guitar sort of in the PA and out again.
Yeah.
Because it might be a beautiful acoustic on its own, but they have to have a little preamp to try to sneak it into a PA because you can't mic it and get into a loud room volume,
yeah,
performance volume without that
yeah.
direct stuff. You know?
Yeah, sometimes those DIs come in handy.
They come in handy. So it's really subtle, you know,
yeah.
It's really subtle. Yeah.
So now, Andy, if,
yeah.
and I'm going to put you on the spot
okay.
here because this is kind of not even a fair question.
Sorry.
And if you don't want to answer it, you don't have to, but... Is there any one aspect of this that you do that you enjoy more than another?
Jeez, I can't say I really do. It's the whole thing that's just great. At times I've had guys just playing rehearsing.
Yeah.
And again, I play gigs on the weekends, you know, where I drive halfway across the country, you know, halfway across the province or wherever to do those gigs.
Yeah, you pay $100 in gas for $25
yeah.
gig.
We all do that, right?
Yeah.
But you can't not do that, I
no.
don't think. Because once you start deciding not to do that...
Then you don't get a chance to do it
You don't get
anymore.
A chance anymore.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm 54, not that it means anything, but I've seen guys have hand failures and stuff, and I'm thinking,
yeah.
I gotta keep playing because I don't want to be out and all of a sudden have a hand that doesn't work or hurt myself or something, because it could happen at any time. It probably could happen when you're young, but when you're young, you're not conscious of that.
Yeah, well, you're
thinking
now,
if I break my arm or something, I'll never play bass again.
Really?
So I, every gig that comes along, I generally go to, you know.
Yeah.
I try to.
So let's back up a bit and let's go back to the front where we probably should have started. Okay. Where did you grow up?
Spryfield.
Spry boy.
Just around the corner from
Mr. Womble. So that's where all the bad influence comes from.
And one of my earliest memories, which may not make it to the air, is I was in grade six. And his famous brother, Tommy.
Tommy.
Had the giant afro.
Oh, I remember him.
He looked like
the
Cuban assassin.
Yes.
This is a true story.
Yeah.
And we were sitting at Central School. And I was about, I think it was in grade six. And they called the Muskrat Love. That was the rumor around the neighborhood because Tommy and his girlfriend both had the big fur coats.
Muskrat coats.
And watching his brother, you know, his brother had a club.
I remember Tommy.
And he had difficulty crossing the Harry Cove Road. And we were little kids, and we'd see these two hippies come up, and Tommy would have to really be careful that he wouldn't get hit.
Yeah.
And he really had to be careful. And even as a kid, I knew that because I'd see him go. And the wind was blowing with the big afro. And I, they said, that's Tommy Womble. And then I heard years later that he was a fantastic guitar player. And everybody told me, but I've never even met the man.
Well, I'll tell you.
That was one of my earliest memories of the Spryfield older musicians.
One of the very first live music events I went to was at the Halifax Forum. And our listeners are going to say, again. One of the first bands that I saw that night was a band called Beowulf.
Oh, yeah, with Tommy.
And Tommy stepped up to the front, and he planted that boot.
Yeah.
And I learned a valuable lesson that night. Every time you see Tom Womble put that boot up forward, get ready. Because there's a solo coming, and it's going to blow your mind.
There was a few guys right from that neighborhood. He was one of them. Bill Wallingham.
Yeah.
And Dennis Simkin. And I'm talking from the Spryfield and Purcell's Cove. Jackie Harris.
Jackie Harris, yeah.
These guys didn't just play. They really played. They were the real thing.
Yeah.
And they were only young men in the real thing, like 20 years old.
Yeah.
They played like someone that played for 100 years. Unbelievable how good they were.
And,
you know, Jackie Harris. Unbelievable. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
No one could replace him.
No.
That guy was on. It was unbelievable, his creativity.
Yeah.
You know, that's not just playing a shuffle and saying you're good at a shuffle. Like, he could create stuff. Like, unbelievable.
Yes.
And Bill Wallingham was a master guitar player at 17 or 18 years old. It's almost like they just got it overnight, and flute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's funny because guys that like that are like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for example, the Huttman brothers.
Fantastic.
You know, excellent musicians, great songwriters. One of them's a fantastic carver, and I think the other one's a painter. Yeah. Or maybe the same guy does it all. I can't remember.
They're the kind of guys who play on a desert island if there's nobody around.
Yeah.
You might get bored with the guitar and throw it down. But these guys would play.
No.
Bill would have a guitar with one string left. He still would have been playing it.
Yeah.
It's really strange. Yeah. And he had a way as a kid, because I was kind of one of them. He could bring you over and get you to just pedal one note, which means go bump, 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 and then hit here and hit there. And before you know it, you were inspired to play.
Teaching you bar chords.
He'd play, no, just one note.
Even just
on
one
a,
note.
On the bass or something. You could have your pedal on the bass in 2 minutes and then play this and play that. And next thing you know, you were involved in something that was way beyond what you would even imagine.
Yeah, all my
very
friends
gentle,
said,
eh?
Yeah. All my friends said, give me that guitar back. Your fingers don't move. Give me that. Which was kind of a drag.
Well, those guys had a lot of, like today you have YouTube and all that. And I don't know where they got everything, you know, where they got all their, you know, information, because a lot of it, I guess, was given to each other and slowing down records, learning songs. And Jimmy White, the Richie Oakley story was those two guys hooked off school in junior high to go downtown to Silverman's Music to look at a Stratocaster in the window. And the next day they went back to school, they both were caught. And the principal sweated them out. And Jimmy lied and said he was sick. And Richie told the truth and said they went for a guitar. But anyway, that's nothing to do with the story. But Jimmy could play bebop jazz and like he had went to Berkeley or something. He still plays like that. It's unbelievable how good the guy was. And Richie said, you know, I could perform and I could stand on the speakers and rock real hard. But he goes, that Jimmy was really good. So he was always jealous of how good Richie was, or Jimmy was.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and there was no
very good guitar.
You know, I mean, no need to be jealous because
no, but
I mean,
was,
he had his own. Yeah,
he had his own thing. He but said, I listened thing, to this guy, and he goes, he was so good. You know.
Yeah.
And I said, but you know.
And you know, it's amazing sometimes when you put two people together. We know a duo, and they're so good together.
Yeah.
Because they complement each other so well, and I mean. They don't even have to look at each other. You could put these guys in a different room, but just let them hear the song that they're playing, and they play it exactly the same way and fill it in the same way. They don't need to be there. They just know. So now, Andy, I asked you if there was any one particular thing that you'd rather do than any, and you pretty much said no. You like it all.
No, I like doing bass playing and recording.
Yeah,
I don't like getting bogged down in the quagmire of mixing all the time. Not with someone next to me. There's nothing wrong with that, but you can drag it out. It's kind of like having a pizza in the oven. Sooner or later, you got to pull it out. You got to throw it out and say, here it is.
Yeah, it's done.
But if you're going to sit, if you're going to wait a year for that pizza,
yeah,
it's going to be probably pretty good, but it ain't going to be any better than if you took it out a week earlier or a day. It's just, that's my philosophy. I don't have to critically mix for years on end. It doesn't get me anywhere.
You know, and we've had this discussion with other musicians in the den about that. It's
yeah.
Like, when is it done?
Yep.
Right? Because no matter who I've talked to that's just put out a CD, and I ask them, are you happy with it?
Yes.
They say, yes, but I would have liked to have done this, or I wish I would have done that. I think it's the nature of the beast.
If you build a house, which I work on every day as a carpenter, you might not be happy with your bathroom, but it's so many details involved with that house, 10,000 pieces. There's
yep.
no way that every one of them is going to be right in a row. And that's what your CD, when I play bass, I play a song, I play whatever, how many thousand notes in a song. Well, you know what? A few of them, I miss the rubber ducky, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's very quick, you don't notice, no one else notices, it's about me, but I'm mad. But what I'm saying is that life is percentages, and I realize if you do a CD, it's got to be a little thing you're not
there's got to be something in there you're not going to be
doesn't matter what you do, if you drive home, you can criticize your drive home, you're going to find something wrong with how you drove home, you know, there's always something.
But I'm a firm believer that if you look on that drive home, you're going to find a little gold nugget, too.
That's right. That's what I say, that 99.9% outweigh that little problem, that little irritant.
I'd rather have that little tiny wee one little gold nugget than a whole big bunch of bad ones.
Yep.
I'll take the one little good one. Thank you.
Used to play in a big bar in Dartmouth with Richie and John Snyder from Fandango, and we had a band, Bryson Koenig, that they played for many years in the country circuit. If there was one complainer in this room, bar manager or owner would go over and say, hey buddy, here's your $10 back.
Yeah.
Because that guy would cause so much trouble.
Yeah.
And I saw it happen. I said, what did you say to him? Well, I gave him his $10 back.
Yeah.
You know, why? Because there's 599 people dancing and having fun on a Friday night, and we got a grump over there complaining.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go talk to him. And they would tell him, here's your $10. But then instantly the person would flip, and then he was your best buddy. He's
yeah.
setting up drinks and he's happy. But before that, it was you're too loud. And the manageress was, the theory was, you know, it's Friday night. People are here to have fun. They worked all week. They're here to dance, and, you know, maybe it is too loud. But, you know, don't be the only one that's, you're the squeaky wheel, you know.
I'd had a bottle of cotton balls in behind the bar and said, here, put a couple of these in your ears and it won't be nearly as loud.
Oh, yeah.
Or here's another beer.
Yeah, exactly. Just,
you know,
do something. But,
yeah.
You know, don't complain. I mean,
yeah, and if you're the guy that's all you're going to do is go out and complain, do us all a big favor.
Yeah.
Stay home.
Exactly. You know, she was never rude to these people, but it was the same situation.
Yeah.
It was more like checking them.
So, Andy, we've been talking about all these people that you've been bringing through the studio
yes.
and everything like that. So, I think
sure.
that we need to showcase some of these people.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let you and Jim
yep.
work out the particulars of what the music is, but... from my point of view, you can go back as far back into the history books as you like.
Okay. Well, I'll just do just a few years back. And
yeah, well, we won't say.
We were listening to Monty on the way
over. Yeah, we listened to Monty on the way over. Very, I liked, there was a couple arrangements we listened to that I really, really liked.
So
we only heard a couple of tunes. The one that I haven't been with Jesus.
Walking with the Lord.
Walking with Jesus. Yeah, I haven't walked with the Lord.
Yeah.
Great
songwriter,
tune.
Right?
Great song.
Yeah.
Nice, really nice flow to it. I like the tone of his voice. He
yeah.
got that kind of gravel thing going on,
yeah.
some little partial of that. I don't know why.
No, but I mean, he's like a wonderful songwriter.
Yeah.
And his lyrics are not complicated. And no. I'm certainly not a lyricist, but they're bang on.
Well, and his music's not complicated. And I mean, I don't mean this in a bad way. I'm not saying it derogatory, but his music is not like highly, you know.
We did the CD that way on purpose. Yeah. Al Hollett played some guitar on it, my friend. And Al came in. We did about 5 or 6 tracks. And at the end of it, we were just trying to mix it down. And it's like I had too much spice. I had salt, pepper, you know, oregano. And this. And so we suddenly realized, throw all those away. And just put the salt and pepper on it. And that's what the whole CD was, basically a stripped down thing. And I can't get over it. His songwriting was just wonderful.
Yeah, for me, it was like, it was a kind of music, if I was driving, like I could listen to that for 1,000 miles.
He's kind of like a Ron Hines, and I don't mean the music style, I mean that his songs ring, you know, even if he doesn't do them, they're wonderful songs for other people to do or to hear.
And that's a gift as well, be able to write something that somebody else can sing you know, that sounds like they did.
He has one that's a deja vu, Baby Don't Cry.
Baby Don't Cry.
Which is like a deja vu. You'd swear you heard it before, but he wrote it. And when you hear it, you go, I swear I heard that before.
Yeah.
But it's never really, he's never really marketed his CD. We just did it as a project.
And, well.
The Boogie Boys.
Called for me, I just had to go. love is the answer to everything.
Troubles going down, troubles going down. Whole lot of troubles going down, troubles going down. Need to go from this place. Some things along the way. Here is the one place I can't be found. Trouble's going down, yeah. Gotta go, gotta hit the in a 6-foot hole. My whole world turned upside down. Trouble's going down. Whole lot of trouble going down. Something I just don't need. When everything goes wrong, trouble's going down. Life's a tunnel, dark as night. Plain to see, there's no end in sight. Feel like a man who's about to drown. Trouble's going down, yeah.
We could go on probably, sure, for like another 5 days about the music from the 60s and the 70s, yeah, that was in this city.
Yeah.
You know, Andy, I want to thank you for stopping in today, sure, because I think it's really important that the people around here get to know who the musicians are that have been around. And unfortunately, you know, in a lot of instances, if the guy's name is the name of the band, then he's the guy that gets the, yeah, you know, the allocates. A lot of times you never hear about the drummer or the bass player or the keyboard player. You hear about the front guy and that's all.
Yeah.
But what people don't understand is that a lot of those people that are standing behind that front guy, there's a lot more to them,
yeah,
than just the bass player.
I used to describe to people that in every city there's about 50 musicians at any given time that are guys that are playing all the time.
Yeah.
And when the bars were more busy, 3 nights a week, guys like myself and Ross Billard and Bruce Dixon and all those guys, and, I mean, that's heavy names, but I mean, they were all playing all the time.
Yeah.
So those 50 guys, doesn't matter where you go, Guatemala or whatever, you know, I mean, yeah, any little city you go to,
yeah,
anywhere, Sydney, Cape Breton, there was 20 guys at every Saturday night. You,
yeah,
see that same guy and he was playing all the time.
Yeah.
And I was one of those guys. His Jim's brother was one of those guys.
Yeah.
Gordy Thomas was one of those
guys.
Yeah,
Gordy, you know.
Gordy would have a calendar. If it was 52 weeks in the year, he could have had 70.
Yeah.
He never, ever was off.
And you know, you're right. It's the same today. People who make it their business to work will work.
Yes.
People who complain that there is no work or there is no business won't.
Yes. I have no time for the people that say there's cliques and all that. You know what? It's not cliques. What it is, it's just friends. I call my friends, and there's always a group of people, and people say there's a clique. You know, they don't call me or something. You know what?
They don't call you
because I don't call them either. Every now and then I run into these guys, or they'll play drums at something that I'm in or I'm there, and I can leave and say, well, I hope they call me. But I'm not in their group of friends that they play with all the time. So I got called, and yeah, I did my job, but you know, I don't expect to get called again unless they need me. It's not like I'm going to be called every Friday night. And there's convenience too, which just sounds really lame, but there was a young musician here the other day, my friend Max Bellefountain, his father's Dave Bellefountain.
Yeah.
Max is going to NSCC taking music. He came here with his father driving, and he's always asking me questions. And I said, Max, good thing you're getting the car, man. I said, why? Because I don't want to play with anybody. I got to drive to pick up. And that's what, you know, I've had that years ago that was thrown at us, that we had a wonderful guitar player with the country rock band Fandango we were going to get, but he had no car. And my vote was, he's got no license, no car. I can't drive him home drunk at the end of the night, and I can't pick him up every single time we play, because we were playing 3 and 4 nights a week.
Yeah.
So it's very important to be reliable. I know that sounds really corny.
No.
But if you got to pick somebody up drunk and stop at the liquor store while they hide a pint in their jacket and go to a gig and nip out of it, you know, that's pretty bad. Doesn't matter how good you are. You just have to be reliable.
Yeah.
And it's that really means a lot.
Yeah.
It means anyway.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it depends on any job that you have. Okay?
Exactly.
It's not anybody else's responsibility to get you there. It's yours.
Yeah. It's a really weird concept because guys think I just want to play guitar. This young fellow Max was here, and he's got his license, and I said, that's good, Max, because, you know, I wouldn't be taking the bus to Cole Harbor to go rehearse with somebody. And he goes, yeah, I won't be either. Now I could borrow Dad's car, and I can go over. Because that's really important, eh?
Yeah.
It's really important to not be inconvenient. When I was practicing with Dan here, and Ross, and Mike Carroll, we'd call a practice for 6:30. Those guys were here at 20 after. And just like the hockey game started, 6:30 we were on.
Yeah.
There was no small talk. And I'm not saying you can't have small talk, but there was no useless, like we were cutting meat right away. Like,
well, that's what you're here
for. And then
for.
At 8 o'clock it was all done.
Yeah.
Then we laughed and went on. But
exactly.
It was very professional.
Yeah.
Just I hate to be a sergeant like that, but that's my nature.
That's the way it should be. And on that note.
Yeah, right on.
And on that note, we're going to say, Andy Lambert.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us in your beautiful studio.
Sure.
And for having us at your table and sharing some thoughts and some stories with us. And we'll do this again. All the next time we'll come back and we'll just talk stories.
Sure.
Thanks, Frank. we'll put out the bribe money first. We'll let everybody know that you're going to be telling stories and see how much money we can make.
And we'll bring a couple of players.
Yes, and we'll bring a couple of players with us the next time we come.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thanks, Jim, and thanks, Wayne.
Awesome. Not a problem.
Thanks. I appreciate you guys coming.
Well, we certainly do appreciate having you here. Ladies and gentlemen, as we always say on the Wolf's Den, get out and support live music. It's the only way it's going to survive is if you get out there and pay your $5 or $10 to go in. You can give up one of those Starbucks coffees a week to go to a live show to help a real person that could use it and that will entertain you a lot better than a cup of coffee. And you know what we always say here on the Wolf's Den, ladies and gentlemen, please, please, please be kind. Be nice to one another. It really and truly doesn't take a whole lot to do it.
Don't be a meanie.
And always, always, always hug the ones you love. Love you, Clifford.
I was waiting for you, holding out hope that dreams would come true. I was wondering where in the hell you've been. I was waiting on the promised land. I'm so tired waiting on you. I'm so wild. I'm feeling confused. Why the hell I'm wasting my time? What goes up comes down. So I'll see you around. Started walking towards the Lower East Side. I could have hopped a train, but I needed time, so I stopped for a drink down to Banjo Jim's. I heard a man singing them hallowed hymns. I'm so tired, I'm waiting on you. I'm so wild, I'm feeling confused. Why the hell I'm wasting my time? What goes up comes down. So I'll see you around. To the earth, and I thought about jumping to the angels I heard. So I headed back home to tell you goodbye, cause I'm headed for the northern lights. I'm so tired